is Rob Stone from Fox Sports.
Hey guys, this is Cole Liker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
You are listening to the Unused Substitute.
The Unused Substitute.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
Get off the pitch!
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Ball's going to bounce. Dennis free in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Good evening, everybody. It's good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night, July 3rd. Happy Independence Day Eve. You're listening to the Unused Substitutes, your Rowdies Talk Radio, the Green and Gold Gospel, live on Radio St. Pete, part of the Beautiful Game Network, and sponsored by Roughneck Scarves and Golden Gold Press. My name is Matt, and sitting next to me again is this. This is 2 weeks in a row, isn't it?
Yes, this would be 2 weeks in a row that we've attempted to do this.
I've spent so much time down here for all the U.S. men's and women's games, I honestly have no track of time. And it's been a lot of fun, but I'm really looking forward to it all being over after Sunday.
Yeah.
Steven, how are you doing tonight?
I'm a little worn out, but I'm doing okay.
You sound
doing
good.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, worn out. The energy level's just not there, which is funny because, of course, like, the Rowdies had a really, like, just absolutely brilliant weekend.
Right.
So, of course, I should be, like, really thrilled, really excited, really pumped, and I'm just, like, totally drained.
I think because of that weekend, I'm feeling kind of the same. Like, I actually got to make the trip to Al Lang for the first time, and I'm trying to see. It was, like, 2 or 3 games. Home game since I've been up there.
Yeah, you haven't been here for a while.
I know, I've been slacking.
Shame.
But I was there, shame. And it was a great night. So we'll hop right into it. Last Saturday at Al Lang for Pride Night, the Rowdies defeated the Ottawa Fury, hashtag why so furious, by a final score of 2-1. What was your good, bad, ugly?
Well, I mean, spirit is my good thing, but I mean, to a certain degree, but no, that was fun. It was a lot of fun in the context that, and I said this in a tweet post-match, but to me, the substitution and the tactical changes that we made as far as player positioning and things like that during the game, like even after the subs, like we were moving players around afterwards. Brilliant. Neil gets an A++ in my book for that game, because to me, that victory is completely him. Not to take anything away from the players, but like Malik, when he came on the field, started out in the right mid, and then we changed him over to the left mid after he came on the field.
Right.
And then guess where the assist came from? The left side of the field, went to the other assist, which was Kasana, and then obviously the goal scorer, which was just, you know, brilliant.
Well, and even we were talking about this last week when the details of all these trades and player moves started coming in, and it was the topic of conversation, excuse me, at the tailgate as well, and even, you know, during the game, you know, what is Lucky going to start? Is he, what, you're going to take, you know, Tejada off after like 60, 75, put Lucky in. Leave it to Neil to find a way to get Lucky on while also keeping his two leading scorers in Tejada and Guinzotti in, because... And I was very proud of myself, because I still admit that after 5 years of doing this, tactics is not my strong point. But seeing Lucky come on, and I, you know, instantly you can see Guinzotti kind of drop back into that kind of, you know, lead midfield kind of spot, kind of playing behind the two of them. I thought was a brilliant way to get those guys involved and you know, still send the signal to the, not just the players, because they know, but to the fans that, you know, this is, they're still attacking, they're still pushing for more, which was nice. So I was like, oh man, I thought it was a great move, and then I was a little proud of myself for realizing that at first, and then noting Lucky getting the assist in the 92nd minute, just like he did in his original debut. Well, not the assist, but was involved in the game winning goal against the then Carolina Railhawks, sending a low cross into the box. It gets deflected and then own goal into the net in that game. So, you know, Lucky is nothing if not consistent, and maybe a little lucky.
Yeah, funny that. Luck matters. No, absolutely. I mean, again, Lucky brought in something that we needed, which was another high-pace, high-pressure player, because, like, Allen wasn't doing that for us up front. And for whatever reason, I mean, obviously through training or whatever, as far as the performance in training that obviously we don't see every day.
Right.
You know, Taylor doesn't necessarily bring that element to the game. So, like, it was when you talked to inside the staff, there was definitely an impression that we needed another pace striker.
Right, right.
Involved in the field. And, you know, so... And that was essentially the reason for why we traded away Andrew Nari. That was something that I had... Wow, what did I just say? Oh, Hoppino. See, I'm out of it, man. I am telling you. It's not even lack of sleep.
You're not
fine.
Even drinking like I am.
I'm like I said, all week, I've just been drained. No, Hoppino. That was the thing, is that Hoppino was... And this is where I was going with that. He's, you know, he's clearly behind Tenari. He's clearly behind Steinberger in the attacking midfield depth chart. So it was pretty clear that, you know, he was expendable to a degree. So the ability to trade him away to pick up a quality attacking player, because, like, he's been doing a lot with Louisville, not necessarily statistically, but through energy and through morale, he was a big part of what Louisville was doing.
Right.
And that's the thing that's interesting about what we gain from him coming to this team, is that, again, we saw it right away, having our three goal scorers basically on the field at the same time was incredible. Like, it was amazing to watch all of these players together. So, yeah, I mean, this is exciting, you know, and that's the thing. It's now we come up against, you know, again, because we're not playing multiple games a week right now. You know, it's the whole month of July is one game a week. It's not until mid-August that we get a second game in a week. So, we really get to just kind of settle down and
kind of get into a routine.
Exactly. Yeah. We're going to start seeing the same players, you know, starting 11. We might, I don't know for how much rotation we're going to see. I mean, look, Tejada's going to miss 1 week.
Right.
You know, so there'll be a little rotation there, and then maybe one or two players off and on, but there isn't going to be much. You know, Adoro's already sat out for yellow cards. Diakite's already sat out for yellow cards. So there's, like, nobody else on the radar for yellow card accumulation. So for, like, right now, it's pretty much, if we want it to be, we can just put the same starting 11 out every week for the next, like, month and a half, just because, technically.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of that's going to be road trips. I put a graphic up on our podcast Twitter account in the header with, like, the upcoming home games. So I updated it after last weekend because that was it's like the next three home games. We've got three home games between now and the next to last week of August. Four between now and the actual end of August, because the week after. There's going to be a lot of going out on the road. So being able to kind of rely on this same lineup and get a good fit, I think will be helpful as they go through this part. And also, if everything that's been going on so far holds, it's going to bode well, because we've been a good team at home, but we've been an extremely good team on the road. Not just in terms of we've won 5 out of 7 and drew the other two, but I'll get to this later. The amount of goals that we concede on the road is where our defense is making its name for itself. But I want to go back real quick. You mentioned Leon Taylor when talking about the moves. And I don't remember if we talked about this last week, but I think it kind of got discussed afterward and it got discussed around the stadium on Saturday. Is the trade maybe not like a direct, like, hey, let's do this because of that, but it's kind of a wake-up call for Leon, isn't it, don't you think?
It's hard to say because of the fact, you know, because we don't see training every day, You know, it's not like we're literally beat reporters that get a chance to watch the guys play and do interviews with every player, every coach after every day. Like, it's not like we're not that in depth to it as far as what really goes on behind the scenes. It's not like we're that kind of a like newscast, as it were.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is obviously we're doing this in our off time from our day jobs. I mean, it's
well, and I don't know. I think I kind of phrased like I don't think they sat. I don't think, you know, Lee and Neil got together and said, "Hey, what can you know? We need to shake Leon up a little bit. What can we do?"
But I don't really.
Do you think he's got to? He has to take it that way, kind of.
No, because I think that if that was the case, then they would have traded Taylor and not Brandon Allen, or you know, or at least allowed him to go elsewhere, type of thing. So
true.
And so that's the thing. It's I think. Leon likes I mean if I had to take it from a completely outside perspective with absolutely no insight whatsoever, I would think that Leon probably enjoys playing here. I've had a chance to interact with him a couple times. He seems to enjoy the area, at least, you know, from what I can tell.
Right.
But I've got a feeling that Neil likes him too.
Oh yeah, I got that impression last year when he was bringing him on and talking to him.
Yeah, and that's kind of the vibe that I have, is that, you know, I've heard from some folks that he's just completely depth position, that he's not necessarily going to be in a starting role that's going to absolutely light up the field, type of thing. And I get it. He's more depth than anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's...
And that's the thing, is that I think Leon, to a certain degree, because he's so young, might be okay with that.
Yeah.
Whereas Brandon is trying to make a bit more of a career right now because he's older. A little bit older, not by much, but a little bit older. And maybe he's trying to, like, he realizes that, like, his peak is, like, right now. And if he doesn't do anything, like, right now, his career is basically over in a year or two. Whereas Leon has a couple of years to figure it out.
Well, if I'm right, you know, last year was Leon's first year as professional, right?
That's a level of detail that I have not memorized.
I'll have to go back and check and see. I know who I can't rely on, and he will remain nameless, but the same person that led me into getting chastised by Neil Collins in the post-game interview. Not that I'm still salty about that. You'd think I was Piers Morgan, the way I'm acting about this. Any other good? We had the tactical use, the use of subs. I mean, the move for Lucky, you can say, paid dividends immediately. And we all talked about his ability to kind of finish in front of goal. And he had two or three chances. I remember one where there was, you know, kind of a bad first touch. I remember one where he got a good shot off that got deflected. And it was kind of like, it's going to be, you know, he's got to figure out a way to get in. But once he plays out to the side and works with Seba, who he played with at the New York FT Cosmos, and Leo and a couple other players too, he mentioned. And that's one of the things, I think, one of the reasons that goes into this move, is you can make a move and bring a new guy in, but he's not new to a lot of the guys on the team. He's, you know, a lot of the starters and the players, and he's an experienced guy. So I thought that was good. I just, the whole night, I mean, there's really only, I think we'll say one bad, was the defensive gaffe by Diakite that leads to the goal, or are you going to put that under ugly?
No, that's my... I think I would classify that as my bad. I mean, I thought, as far as good highlight, you know, performances as far as the night's concerned, I kind of give a good to Ekra. I mean, considering it's still like only his like second or third game back on the field since that long absence, he did fantastic. I mean, overall, from what I can tell, I mean, we really haven't lost a step much. Considering, you know, that's only like his, what, second full game back? I mean, if that, it might even be less than that. But, I mean, I thought Ekra's performance was really good. And I thought that was something that bodes well, having him up to speed already.
Do we have anything for ugly?
I don't really know. Okay, how about this? I've got an ugly. And I'm going to go on this route just because I kind of feel like it deserves to be mentioned.
That one Ottawa fan?
No, I'm cool with him.
Yeah, he's fine.
But speaking of fans, only 5,300 for an announced attendant on Pride Night? With everything going on, with all the promos going on, with everything else going on, 5,300? It felt more full than that. That was one takeaway that like everybody had. Was it felt like there were more people there than 5,300?
Well, and part of it is, I think the midfield looked fuller than it usually is, and that maybe kind of lured us into that. I think a lot of people probably were put off by the prospect of weather.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know, and I know it was meant to reassure, and it gave me other feelings too, but putting out the picture of like the tarp on the field and saying everything's going to be fine.
Which was hilarious because I don't know if it rained like a drop in downtown City.
Well, I always laugh because
barely anything at all.
Because I always have the games where I look at it and I'm like, all right, what time am I going to leave to get there? And I'm like, oh, I might need to leave early because it's going to rain. Anytime I think, or like, oh, I need to bring some, you know, maybe throw an extra pair of clothes in the car because we're going to get poured on and I'll change after. And then it never does. And it's always a beautiful night.
Yeah, right. And
that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
So every time I start to worry about the rain for a minute, I'm just like, wait a second. It never happened. It almost never happens that way. And then I will say, like, I was watching the radar and coming from the Manatee, Sarasota line, like, there was a cloud over my house, and then it disappeared. And I checked the radar, and there was a giant blob coming up from, like, North Sarasota. And I'm like, I'm leaving now. I've been on the Skyway when we've had to stop because, like, there was no visibility. Yeah. So I was definitely getting over there.
Yeah, I don't know. It was, like I said, it was weird. 5,300, besides the fact that just, for us this year, for the last couple of years, that actually is kind of low. But I don't know. That kind of bothers me. It bothers me that there weren't more people there. Especially a week after we were saying we need butts in the seats, and then it ended up going down. So it kind of bothered me from that aspect. I think that's kind of that. If I'm going to put an ugly on a win, that's going to be my win. It has nothing to do with the field at all, because we actually played really well in that match, especially against a strong Ottawa team that's going to be a playoff team at the end of the year. We might see them again, you know, later on down the line. So, I don't know. I think that's where I would take it. I thought the performance overall was fine.
Man of the match? You having a hard time deciding?
Yeah, because there's so many different ways you could take that. As far as I will do something interesting, because I've been a harsh on him to a certain degree. Personally, and not because I've been told I've been harsh, but I kind of feel like I've been harsh on the kid. I'm giving my man of the match to Malik. Because if it wasn't for his spark when he came off the bench, we don't draw that game. And I think that was a key sub that we needed at that time. I thought it was great having him come off the bench as a burst of speed, burst of energy. And if it wasn't for his hustle to create that play at the end, I mean, granted, Lucky helped and Sebastian finished, but I'm giving it to Malik.
All right, let me pull this up. I just want to see real quick. I don't remember if it was us, you and I that did this before, or who, but we were pulling up the new FOTMob ratings and comparing.
That's all you, because I don't even have that app on my phone. All
right, so it must have been me and Dan that were doing this before.
No, we did that like the very first show that I came on. You were bringing up FOTMobs to see if I agreed with the FOTMob ratings.
All right, so okay, who do you want to guess who you think FOTMob said was man of the match?
Yeah, but I don't even, like I said, I don't even have FOTMob on my phone, so I don't even know what the metrics are. I don't know how they grade players.
Well, even if you have the app, you don't know how, because they just pop up a number next to the guy. Guenzotti with a 7.5.
That was, you know, what's funny about that is that was going to be my guess, because I'm sure FOTMob probably, I would imagine that scoring a goal is probably going to boost the number pretty strong.
A stoppage time goal after
right,
some
exactly.
Some chicanery. I don't know if that's a Canadian word. I'll have to ask my mom. I might say, you know, the goals were nice, but my favorite part of the match may have been who was it, Diakite and an Ottawa player getting into a shoving match outside the box. And the keeper falls over and is down for like 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay, so no, that wasn't Diakite. That was... Oh, I remember this. Hold on. That was Poku.
Oh, yeah. Poku, yeah.
And you know what's funny? You remind me of this because, gosh darn it, that was actually going to be my on-field ugly for the night. And I can't believe I forgot about that. Yeah, Poku, on a call that was not his... He didn't look around for the referee to find out what the actual decision was. He literally ran up to the player and tried to smack the ball out of the guy's hands. Don't do that. What are you doing? I mean, if you're going to do something that bold, he's lucky he didn't get a yellow for that.
Right.
If I'm a referee, I'm giving a yellow for that. You don't almost barely assault a player on the field.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that referee didn't give a yellow to.
Almost did that, you know, without a live ball in play. I don't know how he didn't get a yellow for that. But, like, there are smart moments. Again, we talked about this last week about how Diakite likes to get under people's skins.
Right. Right?
And that's, like, his gamesmanship behind it, which I can appreciate. I played defense growing up. I love bothering people like that. I always thought it was funny when attackers were doing it to me and things like that. You know, I've always enjoyed that part of the game because there is gamesmanship involved.
Exactly.
So, like, I don't mind Poku doing that, but be smarter about it. Like, do it when you actually have the call. You know, like, if you've got the call and the ball is supposed to be yours, I have no problem with you going up to a player and smacking the ball out of his hands to put a statement. But you look like an idiot when the call's not yours. You're risking getting a yellow card.
And again, I mean, look, he hit him so hard, the Ottawa keeper was injured.
Oh, that was hilarious. And I'm so glad that we were counting in the stands when he went down.
That's
because
one of my new favorite things.
What, counting when play broke? Yes. And it's funny because, like, it's funny and not to do. My dad actually wanted us to do something like that up in the stands. He had suggested it to some other people in the mob years ago. Like, oh, man, when they're trying to waste time, we should count so that way we can try and remind the referee and maybe he'll get an extra minute or two of stoppage time.
Right.
And it's funny because then, like, somebody else, like, randomly did it a couple weeks ago. And now we just do it all the time.
I remember we used to do that in college at basketball games. When players hadn't inbounded or for like the 5 second rule in the lane, I remember doing that and it was effective with the referees but also with the players, like it got in their head a little bit. And here I was saying, you know, how this is a different Ottawa team, they don't have the time wasting keeper and all of a sudden, you know, I don't know, he read my mind, I guess. All right, so moving on, we had the other results that we were kind of keeping an eye on last week around the league. Ottawa won midweek over Charleston 3-2. Indy and Louisville drew 1-1. North Carolina beat Nashville 1-0, and Charleston beat Red Bull 2. Drew Red Bull 2 1-1.
See, we're both out of it.
I keep
tonight.
Seeing that 2 pop up, and it makes me think of a score. This weekend's actually rest of this week and into this weekend. Notable matchups to keep an eye on. I threw Pittsburgh and Bethlehem Steel in here just because it could be a possible swap from one team being in the playoffs and one to being out. Is tomorrow night, Friday night, is Red Bull 2 against Ottawa. Saturday is Louisville and Nashville. So all ones to keep an eye on. Other teams in the top 10 playing each other. Indy, I don't remember who they're playing, but it's going to be someone not in the top 10. And they're still only 2 points back from us, so that's going to be an important one as well. Looking at your overall table, your regular traditional table right now, the Rowdies are back on top with 36 points. Indy is 2 points back with a game in hand. Red Bull 2 in third. North Carolina FC 4th. Nashville in 5th. Ottawa Fury 6th. Louisville City 7th. Charleston 8th. Pittsburgh 9th. And St. Louis is in 10th, just a point over the line. And this is, you know, that I've kind of followed St. Louis Twitter a little bit this week. Cause I keep going back to when we played them, it was early in the season, but it was for the top of the table. And now they've dropped down and you can argue part of it maybe because of the cup run that they've been on.
Yeah. They got 3 games in hand. I'm not worried about them. They're going to bounce back.
St. Louis is only 1 game in hand on us.
St. Louis.
Yeah.
St. Louis.
Oh, no, I'm thinking about Indy again. Yeah.
That's like that team's got a long way to go.
But, I mean,
you can almost just gift them nine points right now and suddenly they're fine.
On the other hand, they lost to Swope Park last weekend.
Which, I mean, yeah, but, I mean, that's the thing, though, right? Random losses are going to happen, especially when you're doing a cup run. And so, remember, I'm okay with cup runs. It's not like St. Louis is going to miss the playoffs.
Well,
they're not going to miss the playoffs. So
we're at the halfway point of the season. You're totally confident in that?
Well, remember what I said. We asked this last week as we were approaching the halfway mark about, you know, we saw the top 10 teams and we kind of agreed last week that that was going to be the top 10 teams at the end of the year in some order. We had already narrowed down who the 10 teams
I still
teams
feel
were
pretty
be.
Good about that. I think there is one X factor. to keep an eye on. I don't think they'll do it, but I think they might have maybe. And I know we picked maybe, what was it, Charlotte or Bethlehem as one with the best chance.
Well, I said the team that was going to go down, if any of the teams were going to actually lose a playoff spot,
right,
would be Charleston. That was my guess for that. We didn't talk about who would go up.
It feels weird to say it because they're brand new, but I don't think you can rule out Loudoun United yet, sneaking into maybe the 10th spot. They've played a ton of road games to start off the season. They're just opening up the new stadium. They now have a new manager in place. They brought a player on for his professional debut and was immediately named USL Player of the Week with two goals to win their first ever home game in their stadium. And they've got a couple games still to make up. They're one to keep an eye on, at least. I think Bethlehem maybe has a better chance overall, but it wouldn't shock me if Loudoun somehow slides into that spot.
That's fair. I mean, it's fair to say. Like I said, I don't think any of them do. I honestly don't think any of them do, because I don't know if Charleston's going to go on that kind of a collapse,
right,
to run the year on out. But I mean, if they do, or if somebody else has a collapse, I mean, Loudoun's a fair pick. I mean, I'm not a big fan of. I don't think Bethlehem would do it. I think if any of the teams are going to do it, it would be Charlotte, just because they're the only independent team of that bunch. So,
and they've made the coaching change too, and players have responded well to that. I think two wins in a row now.
Not two in a row, but two in their last. They haven't
two
lost
in their last in, three.
They haven't lost in four straight.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, that's a team that's maybe kind of figuring things out a little bit. But I mean, the bottom line is that, like, Bethlehem, Loudoun, ATL2, those are all teams that rely on drop down players from the MLS club,
right,
to really have any kind of like expectation of success. So for me, Charlotte is kind of the best of the bunch.
And if you look at it, what Philly is one of the top teams in MLS right now, so not yep. likely to have players sent down for minutes or experience because they're using them at that level. Mm-hmm. Loud with DC United, I'm not sure. Where's DC United in the overall standings? Do you know?
Off the top of my head, no. I mean, they're in a playoff position, but I'm
I know that
sure
they're just scoring goals from 70 yards and stuff.
I know that the Eastern Conference in MLS is just, like, crazy stacked right now as far as there's, like, no wiggle room right now because nobody's really stand out.
Right.
Because, like, Atlanta had such a bad start to the year, and now they've picked it up, and DC's been kind of hit or miss at times. Philadelphia's been unexpectedly better. I'm not going to call them good yet, but they're better, you know.
Speaking of that, how long do you think Atlanta keeps Carlton down at Atlanta United 2?
For as long as it takes for him to not make a fool of himself.
I mean, there's not a lot you can do in Lawrenceville. I mean, no, they're in Gwinnett now, aren't they? There was Lawrenceville last year.
It doesn't matter. The big thing with people like Carlton is that he needs to stop, like, being late for team photographs and meetings and things like that. Like, you're not doing the right things if you're not, you know, on time to places.
Right.
Which is funny for me saying, because I'm late to everything in my entire freaking life. But, hey, you know, I mean, that's besides the point.
We got this going tonight. We're good. We'll count that. The biggest trend, the biggest thing standing out to me at the table is if you want to take a look at it, is if you want to be in the playoffs, you've got to have a positive goal differential. Every team that's positive is in. Every team that's negative is out, which seems to make sense because you have to score more goals than you concede to win games and therefore earn points to make the playoffs. And this is where I'm going to get into, since we're at the halfway point. I went down and went either yesterday, day before, and kind of broke this down. We've talked about the Rowdies' home form versus their road form. And their home form is fine. They've won five games. They've lost one, and they've drawn four. They score the most goals at home, 15 to 11, 11 goals on the road. But they've conceded the most, too, with seven goals to three. And part of that is a factor of having played three more games at home. We're only going to have seven games versus 10 road games for the second half of the season. But, man, the defense has been so good on the road. And I really hope it holds up in the last half. I think it will.
Yeah, I mean, there's no expectation to unless we start, you know, selling players.
Knock on lacquered wood
knock
here
on
at the bar.
Knock on penny-covered lacquered wood.
all right, so let's take a look at our points per game table. Indy is still on top. Pulling 2.13 points from a game. Rowdies are, like, literally just behind.
I was going to say, they're on top, quote-unquote.
2.12. Red Bull down at 1.88. So Indy and Tampa Bay are your only two teams pulling in more than 2 points per game. North Carolina FC is level with them at 1.88 as well. I didn't read the entire article, but it was a description for the Steal Some Time podcast, the episode today. And the question was, is North Carolina FC the team to beat in the East? And I assume they have something else to it besides, just putting that out there. But, I mean, they're, 4 points behind us and one game in hand. So right now I'm going to say no until I hear the rest of the explanations. I don't know. Nashville with 1.71. Ottawa, who we just played, down to 1.69. 1 point, nice. Pittsburgh, St. Louis, Louisville City, Charleston. So we still have your same top 10 are in both tables, just in slightly different positions. Any specific trends you see from that?
Pitt is as good as I've been saying they are.
As good as they could have been.
Yeah, Pitt is good. Like nobody should underestimate that team right now. And it's funny that. You know, for Steal Some Time, that they would suggest North Carolina being the team to beat, because to me right now, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, because to me, Red Bulls 2 is still amazing.
Right.
And again, I'm thinking Pitt's the team that everybody's like underestimating. So.
And I'll go back to, we're just going to do all kinds of free promo for Steal Some Time, I guess, but I was just listening to last
exactly
week's episode.
Right.
When I drove down here yesterday for the U.S. women's game, because they had the new director at Tampa Bay United Rowdies, Tiffany Milbert, on, the former U.S. WNT player. I hate when this happens. I start setting up something, and I just completely lose track.
Poof.
Yeah. It's gone. I got no idea. No, I remember what it was now. They were mentioning how the nature of the league has changed and evolved over time. And in Pittsburgh, you've got a guy in Bob Lilly who was kind of famous for winning games and even titles based on the back of a strong defense and grabbing a goal here or there where you could. And now they've kind of evolved, and he's kind of evolved into more of a attacking, hit him on the counter, win with your offense kind of coach. Which is a good thing for him, if you want to keep a job, and a good thing for the Pittsburgh fans, who were a little worried at the beginning of the year when it started out a little rough. But it's kind of cool to see that even a guy who's been in the job that long is still looking at, you know, different ways to do things, and that the league is kind of forcing him to do that by its kind of changing nature, which is neat. Other team news, the midseason awards are complete and put out there. I disagree with at least one of them. So, was it the MVP? Was that a Frater from New Mexico, I believe?
I believe he did win the vote. Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that. He's been great, especially. And that's where I want to go. You know, I kind of mentioned St. Louis being maybe being victimized a little bit by their cup run, but New Mexico's doing the same thing in their first year. And not losing a beat. They're 1 point behind us overall in the table. And that's why at first I was a little disgruntled. I was a little peersy about their coach winning Coach of the Year so far over Neil Collins. But at the same time, he's taking a brand new club. They're 1 point behind, and they're on this cup run where they've been on taking. And I don't know whether you should factor what they've done outside USL in whether they're USL Coach of the Year. But in the end, I decided I can't really argue with it. The one I have a problem with, and I don't remember who won it because it should have been Pop Diakite, and it wasn't, for Defender of the Year. Who won that one? I see you got it open there.
Yeah, Brian Rebellon from El Paso won by a margin of 3 votes over Ramon Martin del Campo from Fresno.
And I'll be honest, I haven't watched
a
ton of
a
Western Conference. But Diakite's third, like, that's garbage.
Well, I mean, it's fan voting. And when you have a fan base that is, when it comes to the league-wide type voting, we've never really been known for getting people on social media to do things, which kind of bothers me.
How many fans are New Mexico averaging?
Like 11,000, 12,000
There you go.
And it's a new club, so everybody's really excited,
exactly.
Going, hey, we're like the best in the world.
Yeah. No, it's all the Cody Mizell stands. Which I'll admit, I still love Cody Mizell. So
I love the fact that he didn't do very well with us, like, at all. And then he goes to New Mexico and is just absolutely tearing it up.
It's so great. There's less humidity out there. It's a drier heat.
I'm just going to make a comment that I think that's the state of the Western Conference. But, you know, I mean,
yeah,
I'm just saying.
You mean the greatest conference in the world, if you listen to their fans?
No, it isn't.
No. Exhibit A, Swope Park Rangers. Again, I know. Giant turnover in those teams every year, but still, we're going to use that. We did have one, and you'll get the margin here, but I believe it probably wasn't even close for Young Player of the Year. What's our final toast? Oh, no, it looks like it was pretty close.
By 5 fan votes, Caleb Richards, aw boy, the wonder from Norwich City, took the vote for Young Player of the Year on the midseason votes from Douglas Martinez from that club out west, Real Monarchs.
So you're not only fighting off their fan base, but probably the Real Salt Lake fan base as well.
Pretty much.
All right, we'll take that. I mean, admittedly, I do think we had Norwich City fans voting in this too, just to go vote for Caleb. I saw them promoting it online.
Yeah, just a few. Like, but maybe a couple hundred.
Not unearned.
Exactly.
Not unearned.
Exactly, it isn't.
Someone mentioned, you know, what should Tejada have been up there? I'm sure they weren't going to put too many, you know, more than two from the same team.
Yeah.
Especially when you're putting tight. But they have 5 choices? 1, 2, 3, 4. You've got 5 choices in there.
You're counting on air 5 choices.
This is why I don't teach math. No, because from my angle, your mic's in the way. I couldn't tell if there were 5 or someone else. That's what I'm going to go with. If you had a top 10, is Tejada in there?
I can't comment on
without knowing who else
issues because I don't give a crap about the West Coast. So I don't know. I mean, I there's not a reasonable answer to that. I could barely answer that on the East Coast side. I mean, I don't know how many players there are on the East Coast that are under the age of, what, 10? No, I'm just kidding.
What, wasn't Alvarez for LA Galaxy 2 around there?
Yeah, you're still asking the wrong person.
All right. And, you know, now there isn't really any other team league news to throw out there, is there? No one's on a discipline report. No one's.
Yeah, it is kind of funny. Like when it comes to team / weekly news, like there really isn't a lot. I mean, obviously the Rays did their big announcement with the stadium thing and have now completely bunkered in and taken shelter and offered $2 tickets to the Rays games this week as an apology type of deal. Almost.
To be fair, they're playing Baltimore.
True, and it was pointed out that every baseball team out there does cheap tickets for bad teams.
Yeah.
Like, that's, even the Yankees do it. Like, everybody does that.
Did you see the nutmeg pitch?
I did. There's a good off-topic, completely halfway unrelated thing of...
There's your explanation why it was $2 tickets.
First of all, Charlie Moore, I don't watch baseball hardly at all, right? I listen to a lot of sports talk radio. I watch a lot of sport recap shows and things like that. So I certainly follow along with the teams locally or with other sports in general. But, oh, man, that Charlie Morton's pitch there, that batter was absolutely just hilariously dumbfounded by that. Like, he swung at a pitch that hit almost his... I mean, it
almost bounced up off his foot.
Legs.
Yeah,
like literally, it nutmegged him, and this batter's going for it. Like, that's hilarious. It's absolutely amazing just how sick Charlie Morton's stuff has been this year.
The thing that got me was
what, 9-3 is win loss record or something like that.
Yeah, I think the thing that got me was I really sat there for a second and thought, man, maybe I still have a chance at an athletic career. I got to lose a few pounds in a couple years, and one's a lot easier to do than the other.
Yeah.
But, man, I could swing at a pitch that's going to bounce off my foot and between my legs to the catcher. I could do that easy. I'd do it for half the price wherever that kid was getting paid. Because even if he's terrible and getting league minimum, that's still, like, what, $250,000 or something, I think?
Let's do something that was interesting, though. I was joking around that these $2 ticket deals, and it got, what, 2 weeks ago, a week ago, it was $5 ticket deals and things like that. Like, I kind of wonder... When we look at Rowdy's ticket sales, and how we all talk about the fact that we've got like the most expensive tickets pretty much in lower division soccer almost.
Yeah, I think us in Sacramento, the average price is pretty close, and those are your top ones.
Like, it almost makes me wonder just how close the ticketing revenue is from individual ticket sales. Not counting corporate, because obviously the box suites from the Rays are going to trump us every time, but the individual
ticket
sales...
Oh, you mean comparing the revenue between the Rays and the Rowdies?
Like, when you look at 20,000 people, but how many of those bought $2 tickets? And then you look at, like, our 5,300 that are all spending, what, like, 15, 20, 50, depending on the section you're in?
Right.
Like, I would kind of be interested to know just how close. I bet it's close.
I don't know the...
For individual ticket sales. Like I said, right. not overall on the night, because if you count season tickets and you count suites, obviously the Rays are going to absolutely blow us away for revenue on a single night.
Right.
But individual ticket sales, that I bet it would be pretty startlingly close.
I don't know solid numbers. I think it's all hidden in the books that no one ever wants to show. I do know last year I was told that the and this is going to factor in more things besides just tickets, but that the Rowdies earned more per game than Cincinnati did. And there's factors that go into that, because Cincinnati it rents Nippert Stadium from the University of Cincinnati. The ticketing, I believe, they have ticket reps, but the ticket revenue goes to the college, and the concession does as well, which at Al Lang, all of that goes straight to the Rowdies.
Well, I mean, yes, but of course they brought in the food trucks, which is a good thing. It was a good right. improvement. So obviously it's not quite as much as it was. That actually goes back a long way, though, because, like, I remember being out in the stadium parking lot in 2013 talking to some members of the club that, like, we were talking back then about being one of the highest revenue-generating clubs in lower divisions, like top three, even back in, like, 2013, and that was, what, like 1,500 less people per game?
Right.
You know, back then compared to what it is now. So...
Well, and I think when they mentioned in the sale last year in the press conference, I think Bill said that they were pretty close, or they broke even and actually made a small profit last year.
Well, that was the thing, is that...
happen in Major League Soccer, let alone lower division soccer.
Yeah, exactly. And I think something to consider there is, obviously, we're not privy to some of the information on that, but
right.
a lot of that has to do with capital improvements and what you were actually doing for capital improvements. Because that was one of the things about that is, you know, Bill came in and put in millions of dollars into renovating that stadium. And, of course, that's going to put you in the hole for a couple of years as far as funding and revenue generation and things of that, pulling a profit. And I think that was always the thing was, and that was the selling point from what I was understanding and what I was kind of being told from the folks that I was talking to, was that we had a franchise that was capable of turning a profit with very little change in how we run the business, quote unquote.
Yeah, I think that the heavy lifting was done.
Yeah, like Bill necessarily wasn't making much of a profit, if at all, because most of those years he wasn't, most certainly. But it was so close to changing the way you do the business, like how much you necessarily fund with the renovations, for instance.
Right.
Like, when you don't have to put in, like, a couple million dollars into just renovating the facility in a year, suddenly you might be able to turn a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was one of the biggest reasons why the Rays were willing to purchase us and why they were interested in purchasing us and why others were supposedly in that mix, is that it wouldn't take much to get money off of us.
It's one of the few kind of like turnkey operations available.
Yeah. I mean, you could, because again, that was the thing, right, is that you just change the way the roster's built in terms of how much you're spending on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not spending millions of dollars on capital improvements, if you don't have to, suddenly the amount of revenue that you were making is, you're making a profit. Like, because our revenue level hasn't really changed much from what I understand for the last several years.
Right.
Because we've averaged pretty much the same attendance number within a couple percentage points for going on, what, 4 years now, I want to say? It's been pretty flat.
I think so. Pendleton put out a graphic. I need to go back, and it's been fairly level.
He's such a master at Excel, and it ticks me off.
He's a master of so many things.
He is a master of – he's a brilliant jack of all trades. It's so good. And if you're a Traveler fan, that's his there's your obscure RPG reference for the night.
What's that?
Traveler. If he's like nothing but jack of all trade and traveler. There you go. For all of you absolute hardcore gamer fans out there, there's my obscure gaming reference for the night.
There was one bit of news I saw. I forgot to put this in there, but I just thought about it. My big question Saturday night at the stadium was, when is Georgie Bobblehead night? And now we know. Did you see the little tweet in the video?
I did see
that video. Well, that clip was fantastic.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, that
I love when they get a chance to put some time and energy into that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that's going to be fun to get. I hope. I didn't.
Because I need to buy an extra ticket for my daughter so that she can come to the game and we can get another
get
one.
To.
Yeah.
I still have my mama do Diallo bobblehead somewhere.
Oh, God.
Hell yeah. Hell to the end.
I've got I don't think I have any. I had a Mutiny like license plate left. Although I did see a guy wearing a Mutiny jersey at the stadium on Saturday.
I did.
And
yes.
I did hear from Twitter there was one at the DC United game. This guy was going to try and buy it
that
off of him.
Guy, so apparently there is a parking lot like attendant in DC, supposedly, that wears like a Mutiny jersey all the time. And he's basically doing it to like sell it or something like that.
Right.
Like it's kind of a bizarre story, but still, like, it is a... Oh, man, some of those Mutiny jerseys were great.
All right, well, we should go ahead and start wrapping up, but I don't think we have much else to talk about or anything else.
Well, I'll say this.
I was going to pimp the watch party this weekend, but you got something?
Well, there was something that was kind of noteworthy, something that was dogging the last ownership group for how many years... That we were all afraid that one was dragging the name of the club through the mud and was also threatening our existence because, of course, Bill Edwards, when he bought the club, while he operated the club, was under a constant state of lawsuit.
Yeah, they said what the suit's been going on for 13 years?
Yes, with the Mortgage Investors Corporation,
right.
Craziness with the VA and everything else, and something... And it was just dogging us the whole time. And news came out today. That suit was thrown out.
13 years, and they go, we're going to dismiss it.
A judge finally did make a ruling saying that from what I understand of the recap, the evidence that was presented was certainly there. But because the VA, like, comptroller or something like that, like, didn't do the follow-up necessary to notify MIC that they were breaking some rules...
Right.
You can't call them a whistleblower for breaking rules that they were never really told that they were breaking.
Yeah.
And so it was pretty obvious that if anybody on the planet had followed up with this thing, with what Bill was doing and what his company was doing with the fees and things like that, and that's what generated the whole lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
If the VA had been doing their job correctly, Bill Edwards was going to get nailed to a cross. But they didn't do their job, and so the judge looked at him and said, how can I punish him if you guys didn't tell him that, like, legitimately tell him or warn him that they were doing something necessarily wrong?
Right.
And so it's like, yeah, there's plenty of murky evidence all over the place, but I can't use most of this. The two whistleblowers were not necessarily in a position of authority, you know, to say that, hey, he misled us on purpose. And it mm-hmm. was like, you're not high enough on the chain of command to make that claim.
And I don't want to speculate, but, you know, Bill's been selling off a lot of property, personal and commercial and private property in the last few, like ever since he sold the Rowdies, it seems like. I wondered if part of it was maybe to build up a fund if he was expecting to possibly have to pay a fine or a fee or to sell some of this before it could be seized. I don't know, but, you know.
It'd be easy to speculate that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It kind of makes you wonder if... Because, like, obviously, technically, we're pretty sure, obviously, that whole lawsuit's dead. I don't know if the U.S. Attorney's Office ends up going after him again with a different form of a lawsuit. Who knows?
But I think based on his age and that it took 13 years to get to the dismissal, I think he just dropped it and let it go.
It might.
Sometimes you just take the L.
But it's kind of funny because, like, it makes you wonder where would the Rowdies be right now if Bill still owned the team? With that lawsuit being dropped.
roster would be a lot different, I think, at the very least.
Say what?
I think the roster would be a lot different at the very least.
Yeah, right? Like, it kind of just makes you wonder what this would look like if Bill still owned it after that lawsuit gets dropped. That's...
Are we 10-1-6 after 17? Because you'd have a much different roster.
I know.
And probably the same attendance.
I know. It's fascinating, though, isn't it? Like, we don't really... That's a really weird thought to kind of...
There's an alternate universe somewhere. Maybe the one that Mysterio came from. I still haven't seen the movie yet. I have to go see that.
I haven't seen the movie yet either, but I'm gonna say that it's the... This is going to be the alternate universe where the Reality Stone went missing, and so this is that really evil dark branch of the universe. That's the one that we're living in right now.
Everyone's got goatees, and you know, all bad.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, that is interesting. All right, so we will be back in our different locations next week, as far as I know, because all the U.S. games are ending, which is what's bringing us down here to do this at the same time. If you are south of the Skyway on Sunday, there will be, it's wall-to-wall soccer on Sunday because we're going to have the Women's World Cup final at 11 in the morning, USA versus Netherlands. Immediately after the game ends, the front parking lot at Shamrock is going to turn into a giant block party. Skyway Casuals will be out there. Sarasota Metropolis is going to be out there. A bunch of local and youth clubs are going to be out there. We've got the Copa America final coming on at around, I think, 3:30, 4 o'clock. The Rowdies game is at 5 at Swope Park, which I told you about when I was talking to the Rays guy at McDill like a couple weeks ago, right? Told you that I ran into one of the Rays guys there, one of the Rays executives.
I mean, I've talked to a couple people too, so I mean.
I was talking to him, and they're going to the Swope Park game. Because that's what his son wanted for his birthday.
That is awesome.
They're from the Kansas City area to begin with, so part of it's like, hey, we're going back to the home and
Children's Mercy.
But it was like, yeah, that's their thing. He's like, we're gonna go because that's what he wanted for his birthday after we took him to the first game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like because I'm sure somebody's gonna note you didn't preview Swope Park. Well, yeah, we've already played them once.
We played them 5 games ago.
Like
they've lost 2, drawn 2, and they beat St. Louis.
And guys, like Kansas City's playing 2 games this week, so like no players are gonna be moving up and down.
Yeah,
like this is gonna be the complete Swope Park team more than likely, and this is honestly one of those games where you have to go in and just absolutely destroy them.
Yeah.
Like you can't. Because after this, the schedule gets like a lot more difficult. You play Pittsburgh, you play New York Red Bulls. I think you've got a game against Charleston coming up. You've got a lot of tough matches, especially road matches too. Because I'm pretty sure the New York and the Pittsburgh games are the next 2 after Swope or something like that. And some of those are road games. Like you gotta get 3 points against a team like Swope, especially when SKC is playing 2 games this week.
Because
I think they play LAFC tonight. And
there's a lot of MLS teams. Like we're watching the first leg of the Orlando and Philly, basically two-legged matchup this week.
Yeah, the MLS
schedule
makers did something.
LAFC has 2 or 3 games in over the next 2 weeks, something like that, week and a half. There's a bunch of teams doing that. But if you are south of the Skyway, come down here because the Sarasota Metropolis players are going to be outside, guest bartendering in 2-hour shifts. And each one is going to be raising money through sales and tips for different youth soccer clubs down here in Sarasota. So come on out, and Skyway guys will be out here doing their tailgate. We've been arranging who's doing what as far as the tailgate situation. It's soccer from 11 a.m. until 11 p.m. because you've got the Gold Cup final as well, and then I think they're going to have the Timbers and NYCFC game on as well. I think I know what you're going for here. The final totals.
Yes,
Mob posted it here. You got it in front of you. I'll let you read it.
Speaking of funds and fundraising, first of all, I love the fact that Metropolis is going to be out here because obviously you guys down south of the Skyway have been involved with them and. Doing what you can to try and incorporate that, semi-pro team in this area. Obviously, there's a lot of people out in Lakeland that work with the Tropics. So something that's interesting is obviously Pride Razor and the Pride Month, the fundraisers that we were doing for the local charity. In this case, obviously, Ralph's Mob was working with Metro Inclusive Health, in our area, the final number of what Ralph's Mob raised, grand total, we're looking at $1,725.
That's nice.
We raised in the month of June for Metro Inclusive Health.
I'm proud to be $22 of that.
I'm like 15 of that, I think. No, 20 of that.
Scarf and two stickers?
I think I pledged $5 a goal. So, yeah, we had four goals. So I had $20 a part of that. But still, like, that's fantastic.
Didn't you get a scarf too, though?
I did not.
Oh, that's you did.
I didn't end up getting one. That's fantastic. For the first year that the Mob has really made a push.
Right.
As far as getting the supporters involved with Pride Month, because we had never done that before, like, really. I mean, there was a small effort last year.
Yeah, right.
You know, Mike was telling us about this, you know, that they had first kind of introduced themselves to the Pride Razor, you know, idea last year on a small scale. But to make the first major effort for $1,700 was fantastic. I also know that we did a food drive. I know it went well.
Yeah, they loaded up a truck of stuff for donations.
Yeah, something like that. Like, it was they had a lot of stuff. I brought some fruit over for that too. But no, that was first of all, it's fun. You know, it's always fun to be a part of the community, to try and get more involved, get more involved in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, and again, because it's all about building the club brand. And obviously, we're not, you know, none of us work for the club. Obviously, I'm talking probably mostly to soccer supporters anyways. We all know this. But, like, those types of fundraisers are what we're supposed to be doing off the field.
Yep.
You know, so, and I know that we've done different things. We've done, you know, Movember in the past, you know, as far as different movements that we've done, different things we've been a part of. I want it to continue. I love the fact that we were able to kind of unite to raise this funds. I'm pretty sure it might be one of the largest individual fundraisers we've done, you know, outside of, you know, like Go Gold has
right.
always been a Rowdy's led thing, which is fine. I'm sure we're going to be a part of that, you know, probably forever with Cole Eicher and everybody else. But, you know, that's technically a club-led thing. The Pride Razor stuff was really all us. As far as, I mean, obviously Pride Razor is a part of a lot of different supporter groups around the country, but, you know, we did that like on our own initiative as far as the Pride Razor thing.
Right.
So that's, and of course, like the fact that we designed a scarf, you know, Mike designed that scarf that we helped raise funds through. I love it, and I want more of it. I hope that people approach the Mob with ideas or organizations that we can support. Like, if you're listening to this and you know a local organization that, you know, I know, like, we've raised money, or not money, but we've raised supplies for, like, missions trips,
mm-hmm.
For groups that are going out of country. You know, again, Movember and Go Gold, and, like, we've done a lot of stuff. If you have ideas, don't be afraid to reach out to somebody in Ralph's Mob to throw the idea out so we can get it up the chain as far as, you know, to the folks that are in charge of the charity aspect, which right now is Jonathan Silva.
Right. You know what I meant to put out there? Maybe this is something we can talk to them about or take a look at. The thing the team tweeted earlier in the week about the kid from, I think he's from Tampa Catholic, raising money to build a pitch. Basically, well, we ran into him. You were with me, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
was trying to think. I couldn't remember.
I
couldn't remember if that was you with me or if I had totally forgot to tell you about it. Yeah, we ran into Farouk Qureshi out, and shouldn't have to explain to you who that is, outside Al Lang on the way in. And it was just, like, number one, I was just like, oh my God, Farouk's here. This is cool. Like, but he's partnered up with him with Farouk's Foundation, Love Football, is teamed up with him. And what he's trying to do is he's adopted from Tanzania. And is trying to raise money to, like, they've got this kind of rocky piece of dirt ground that they play on, with, you know, the stereotypical, like, taped together goat stomachs or something, whatever it is they're using. And he's trying to raise $115,000 to convert that to, you know, a legitimate safe to play on field with supplies. And he's already at like $96,000.
Yeah, yeah. Farouk was saying, like I said, I think it's like $110,000 or $115,000 that we wanted to raise. And he started this back in like February, March, is when like Fox 13 and Tampa Bay Times, like they did pieces on him. The boy's name is Jordan Pelube.
Yeah.
I want to say is how you pronounce that.
I think that's what they said in the video.
He is a sophomore at Tampa Prep.
Yeah, that's what it was.
And he comes from Tanzania. And like I said, it was an effort for him to try and build something nice in the community that the community could rally around, that it could almost act like a community center, essentially. It was just a proper, safe, like soccer pitch. Not necessarily grass field type of thing. I think it's going to end up being more like a futsal court.
Right.
But, you know, that's going to be important for that community. And apparently, like, the Rowdies have paired up with them. You can actually buy tickets with a special code word.
Right.
And I'm sure we could probably help out. And I wouldn't be surprised if Ralph's Mob maybe tries to jump on this, too. Maybe. We'll talk to them.
Yeah.
But, like, there's a keyword that you can purchase tickets to get some of the money donated to.
Yeah, we got some of the paperwork.
Yeah, we got some pamphlets. We can spread some info.
Yeah, I'll try and scan those in when I get home. And probably it'll be more like tomorrow when we do it, because it's going to be late. Although I do plan on basically going home and binging season 3 of Stranger Things right around midnight. So around 8 a.m. I'll get around to it.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Stranger Things tonight. Oh, man.
So we'll...
I'm down for the count.
We'll get that out there tomorrow, because there's a lot. Like, you know, there's the stuff they tweeted out and stuff's in the paper, but that stuff that Farouk gave us was really detailed.
Oh, yeah,
As far as, you know, what they're trying to raise, what it's going to look like. They've got renderings for it already.
Was the thing is, like, Jordan... Again, he partnered with Farouk's organization, but he was only at $16,000 back in March. And so 3 months later, Farouk is saying he's at like almost like 96,000 or something. Yeah. Holy smokes. What way to go, kid. Like, that's incredible to have actually gotten that far. So it'd be kind of interesting to be a part of that, maybe.
Yeah.
So we'll see if...
we'll put that there and see if we can...
Yeah, we're definitely going to
figure out ways to get him over the edge.
Pay attention to the social media channels this week. We're definitely going to put some info out there and kind of spread that word around to see who else we can help out with it.
All right. Well, we're a little bit over 9 o'clock, and we're getting into the pregame coverage here, so I want to make sure that we can get the sound on for the guys in the bar to watch this. Let's wrap this up. Our we love yous for this week. My first one... The guy, you know, had a little bit of a rough day, had more than two countries around the world just dunking on him incessantly. So I'm going to send my first We Love You out to Piers Morgan. No, I'm not. No one loves that jackass. To the 23 women, the coaching staff, the hotel scouts, everyone on the U.S. Women's National Team gets our We Love You for this week. Steven, what do you got?
I'm doing it to every single person that was a part of the Pride Razor campaign for the month of June that helped contribute to that $1,725.
I want to throw in too. I thought it was cool. The club did a really cool like explanation video, like, you know, image video, and Sudol was explaining what it was. Which, you know, the whole thing was started by the supporter groups in Chattanooga and Detroit City.
Yes.
And Chattanooga FC won't even acknowledge, like, doesn't. Go on, right? Doesn't mention it, doesn't promote it, doesn't do anything. Whether that's because of their close partnership deal with Chick-fil-A, I don't know. But that's a thing that, you know, I thought was kind of cool that our guys did.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. But I love the fact that the team seemed to acknowledge, like, our efforts a little bit.
Yeah.
And I thought that was amazing. Like, that was great. That whole, what we did in the month of June to support Metro Inclusive Health, I thought was fantastic. And that's definitely my We Love You is to every single one of you that played a little bit of part in that fundraising. I love you all. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank yous, as always, to Wolfface, to Radio St. Pete, and to Shamrock for having us tonight. Thank you to you guys for continuing to find time in your schedule to listen to this, either live or on podcast. If you'd like to share, subscribe, rate, and review us, we would appreciate that. If you want to support us on an ongoing basis, go to patreon.com/unusubspot. I have the site open, like, to do some changes. I just haven't figured out what they are yet. But we're steps closer.
Like putting, as soon, like maybe putting me on the website eventually?
No, you're on there.
You sure about that?
Yeah, yeah, I got you on there.
Is Jake Nutting still listed as an NASL beat writer?
Well, I'm. Yeah, but he's got to change that himself. I can't change that. That's on him. But anyway, we're steps closer. As soon as the World Cup's over, we'll have more time for that.
There you go.
Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves. I'm currently wearing a new Roughneck scarf tonight. I'm calling it the Club and Country Rowdy scarf that I picked up from the store in St. Pete today. Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and U.S. Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team at roughnecksoccer.com. We'll be back here next week, same time, different location, talking about a great Swope Park victory. And I'm just going to kind of tread water here while Steven loads the music. Here it is. Bye. Maybe here it is. Or we can just edit
it. This is kind of awkward because, like, the first time that we were going to do this, it everything came up just fine. The runnies were here, the runnies were there, they kicked the wall around. The runnies were here, the runnies were there.